Hit the music.
Thanks for listening to Election Live coverage on WHYY.
This is how election night began at the WHYY studios, as it often does, with All Things Considered host Dave Heller anchoring our local coverage, producer Brett Rader behind the scenes, and senior reporter Dave Davies providing commentary.
Because there are several congressional seats in Pennsylvania and New Jersey that are truly in play, Dave. I think we're seeing a situation tonight.
As usual, there wasn't much to report at 8:15, just after the polls closed, but we got updates from the Pennsylvania governor's race and the New Jersey Senate race.
Reporters of Senator Bob Menendez, they're watching CNN, cheering at some of the Democratic victories, and one supporter is holding a balloon depicting the president as a baby.
There have been a lot of storylines to follow during these midterm elections. Will Democrats take back the House? Will Republicans maintain the Senate? And how many women will go to Washington in this so-called Year of the Woman? From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Y. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. Today's show, Ladies Night.
Stay with WHYY for election results and analysis throughout the night.
Killer Mike.
To get a better picture of why we're seeing a surge in female candidates this year, my co-host Annette John Hall talked with Kelly Dittmar. She's a scholar at the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers Camden. They started off talking about the last time this happened, in 1992.
We saw our largest freshman class of women after 1992, in addition to just jumping from about 6% women to 10% women after the 1992 elections.
So 1992 was known as the Year of the Woman. We had Dianne Feinstein come in.
So help you God.
I will. Thank you.
Barbara Boxer.
Boxer!
Patty Murray up in Washington. And the first African-American woman in the Senate, Carol Moseley Braun.
It's a new day in America!
What happened to affect that influx?
So there are a number of factors that went into creating conditions that were friendly to women and newcomers in 1992. One of the biggest things was it was a post-redistricting year. That meant that all sorts of districts across the country were redrawn, district lines redrawn, which creates competition. When you redraw these district lines, you shake up the system. That's good for newcomers because incumbents start to become a little bit more vulnerable. When you create those opportunities, it also incentivizes more people to run. And so there were more women who saw the opportunity that they could actually win in 1992. But another big factor that we've also spent a lot of time talking about this year as a point of comparison is women were watching Anita Hill testify in front of an all-male, all-white Senate Judiciary Committee.
I thought he respected my work and that he trusted my judgment.
About an issue that disproportionately affects women, sexual harassment.
What happened next and telling the world about it are the two most difficult things, experiences of my life.
And there was certainly a reaction among women, not just those who were in the House and those who were in office nationwide, but those who were sitting at home and seeing the women's underrepresentation so starkly and seeing the men in power not really getting it. And then
I, William Jefferson Clinton, do solemnly swear.
There was a presidential election that also helped Democrats, which helped women.
How we doing? Everybody having fun?
No.
Why not?
Around 9:30, some big local races had been called.
PR calls for Menendez.
But none involving the female candidates in the Philadelphia suburbs.
Still a lot waiting to come in. And so far, all of the incumbents in our region have been winning so far. So not too many surprises.
This is the point in the night when the results start to trickle in. Then often cascade like a waterfall.
So, Kelly, there is a fundamental difference about why women choose to run for office versus men.
Too often, I think we talk about women as not having political ambition. So women just don't want to run. When in reality, the research is more nuanced than that. So sure, when you ask women how likely are they to run for office, they do report fewer, you know, lower numbers than their male counterparts. But research that was done at our center by two of our senior scholars a couple of years back looked at specifically men and women in state legislatures, asking them, well, what went into your decision to run? And that's where they found this difference between men and women. Women were more likely to say the top response was, I was motivated by a policy concern. I wanted to change public policy. And the top response of men in state houses was, I had a longstanding desire to be a public official. So the shorthand is, you know, women run for office to do something, men run for office to be somebody. But that really matters when you think about getting more women to run. If they look at politics and they say, nothing gets done in Congress, why would I take on the cost of running? The risks, the financial costs, the effects it's going to have on those around me, if I can't actually get the thing done I want to get done.
Trump being in office, how influential was that in causing women to toss their hats in the ring?
It's really hard to draw a straight line to say just because Donald Trump won, all of these women ran. And in fact, we don't want to sort of set a precedent that this is what has to happen in order to get women to run. But certainly it was influential. And I've been talking about it as sort of a catalyst, right? Women who may have already been engaged and interested, but maybe this pushes them over the edge.
A sea of pink hats moved through downtown Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York.
Other women have channeled that energy not just into marching or giving to candidates, but running them.
Last year's Women's March drew a record crowd to protest President Trump. But this year, they say they are marching directly toward the 2018 midterm elections.
You know, this is all about getting out the vote.
Also, though, Trump's success, and particularly his policy agenda, what he promised to do, really was of concern to many of the women running this year. So you'll see the women not just talk about misogyny, but really talk about health care.
I'll fight tooth and nail against the Republicans who attack Social Security and Medicare.
And talk about environmental regulations.
Yes. I think we have a social responsibility to this generation and to future generations to make sure that we keep our environment safe and clean.
And things that they celebrated over the course of the Obama administration and very much saw under threat with Donald Trump coming into office and Republican then control of the executive and legislative branch.
Stand by music. Hit it.
At around 10:30, the favored female candidates, like attorney Mary Gay Scanlon in Delaware County, were officially declared the winners.
So the Delaware County Democrats are in a celebratory mood tonight, especially the women, as their party makes history across the state.
And just like that, Pennsylvania went from having no women in Congress to having four.
Now, four will go to Congress. That is Susan Wild from the Lehigh Valley, Mary Gay Scanlon, who Susan just mentioned, Madeline Dean from Delaware County, and Chrissy Houlihan from Chester County.
The four women who will soon represent Pennsylvania in Congress may not have won, may not have even run, had Pennsylvania not completely redrawn its congressional map.
So let's talk about gerrymandering, especially in Pennsylvania.
The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has released a new congressional district map that
Pennsylvania has gone through a solid 2 years of court cases on gerrymandering. And now many crucial districts in Pennsylvania have new lines drawn. Has that made those districts more competitive?
Where these districts were redrawn, they created opportunities and districts that were more competitive, especially for Democrats in a state that had been, you know, deemed gerrymandered in favor of Republicans. And across the country, but especially again here in Pennsylvania, when we see those redrawn lines in ways that shift power back to Democrats, that also benefits women who are more likely to be Democratic candidates for office.
What do you say to people who say, why do we need more women in Congress?
If we have a representative system, it should be representative of those who are in the population. Women are over 50% of the population. They now represent 20% of Congress. We are a far way from fair representation on that measure. From our research, we also can give lots of stories about how having women's lived experiences at the table when engaged in conversations around criminal justice reform, immigration, Social Security, all of these issues actually have quite gendered aspects to them. If you have men and women who have diverse experiences at the table engaged in these conversations. So outcomes do end up different because women are there, and they end up different when women aren't there. So things are missed, issues are never raised, perspectives are never brought, and that doesn't fully represent our population.
Kelly Dittmar, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's give a quick shout out
to bring it up.
Our engineer, Mike Villers, Brett Rader, our producer, Robbie Broad, production help, John Mussoni, vice president for news, and Jared Lyons generating the numbers. And so check out WHYY.org for complete election results and analysis. Have a great night.
Killer Mike's.
And that's all for our election night show. The Y is produced by Annette John Hall and myself. And special thanks today to our intern, Kelsey Hansen, who stayed up until the wee hours helping to finish editing this show. Let us know what you think of the outcome of the election. You can find me on Twitter at Shai Ben Yaakov. And please subscribe to the podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review us. I'm Shai Ben Yaakov.
We're off the air.